Good evening, and welcome to the Dr. Nyman Show podcast. Today is Wednesday, December 16th, 2020. We hit some records today in the SARS-CoV-2 pandemic, and there is some other information about vaccines and some other topics that Dr. Nyman would like to go over. Dr. Nyman.
Hi, thanks, Ryan. Yeah, I thought it'd be useful. We did set records both with the number of deaths in one day, as well as the number of cases in one day. Might go a little bit higher because you don't have the final numbers in California yet, but the number of deaths actually is 3,618, and the number of cases is 235,991. Now, the cases are elevated a little bit because Washington State started adding probables in. That was about 7,000. So that was kind of a one-time addition. But it brings the numbers up. And they were supposed to be doing this all along. And all the states were. Most of them are. Some are still straggling. They were supposed to report both confirmed and probable cases. And, you know, it's only December. It's only been a year. But Washington State finally started reporting the probables today. And so, like I say, it's only 7,000 or so. But even without those 7,000, it would still be a record. And the number of deaths was, you know, the way these deaths are reported, they're not really real time. They're they require more paperwork. And so there's a little bit of a delay, and then the delays can vary by state depending upon you know, how quickly they're getting this together and who does it and what day they do it. And so some of these numbers aren't that even, and that's why yesterday we actually almost got up to 3,000 deaths. It was 2,996. Tuesdays are frequently a lower day for deaths. There's a lot of states that, you know, South Dakota reported 39 deaths today. They only had 2 deaths yesterday. You know, there's a lot of states like that. New Hampshire reported 21 deaths today. They reported 0 yesterday. So, some of them are still, basically playing catch up from the weekend, even by Tuesday. And Minnesota had 92 deaths today, and they had 21 yesterday. So that number of 3,000 was almost 500 higher than the Tuesday before. So that was an indication that there was a reasonable possibility that there'd be 3,500 cases a day. And last week I had said that the numbers continue to go up, and because of the fact that deaths are a trailing indicator. So the deaths that are being reported now are going up, not because of the holiday weekend or traveling or having get-togethers. These are patients that, you know, were probably hospitalized a month ago or so. And the reason it was pretty clear that these deaths were going to go up is because you had big increases in cases before the holidays. And those increased cases would include an increase in hospitalization, and then that would lead to an increase in the number in ICUs, and then that would lead to the increase of the number that were dying. And so these higher numbers of deaths are not a surprise because of the large increase in the number of cases that's been reported for the last month or even almost 2 months now. And so part of that was California is having some major issues with increasing numbers. They've increased their testing, and the percent positive is continuing to go up. This says they're really not even getting that accurate account. They're getting a significant undercount. CDC recommends that you do enough testing so that your positivity rate is around 5%. California did do that. They actually got it down to 3 or 4%, and then it kind of crept up a little bit, but it was just a little above where they should be, like a 6%. And then they started getting more cases and started doing more testing. And now, even though they are doing more testing, their positive rate is over 11%. And that's translating into a lot of cases. I mean, today, the number of cases was over 50,000, which is a record number. And actually, Worldometer, which I think it's a slightly different start and stop time, actually had it up to 60,000 today. They had over 400 deaths. The LA Times right now has 393 deaths, so it might go a little higher, but both of those are records, 51,000 cases and 393 deaths are both all-time highs for daily levels, and other states contributed to this. Pennsylvania set a record today. It was 278 deaths. Yesterday was 270. Both of those are records. Texas reported 250 deaths today. Others that were above 100 included New Jersey at 131, Illinois at 190, Florida at 125, Ohio at 123, Indiana at 124, Arizona at 108, and Kansas at 144, although Kansas kind of reports every other day. So that's, you know, actually probably a two-day total, really. So there were those states that had those high levels, and then a lot of the other states that reported lower levels yesterday were reporting 30, 40, 50 deaths today. And so you add them all up, and this is easily the largest number of deaths, 3,618. I've described previously these lists of the top 10 days of deaths in the United States, and that list originally had Pearl Harbor and 9/11 and the San Francisco earthquake and Battle of Gettysburg and I can't remember the other one. But two major battles in the Civil War and Antietam, I think. And then there was a hurricane in Galveston that killed 8,000. So other than the hurricane, all the other ones are in the neighborhood of 3,000 deaths in a day. The one battle was 3,600. And today's total actually beats that. So this total is higher than any prior recorded event other than the Galveston hurricane, and which was 8,000. So this would have moved into the number two position, and I've kind of cited this before that, you know, we're on pace that most of those events that aren't due to pandemic are going to be replaced by a day in December of 2020 that basically had a higher number. And unfortunately, like I say, the deaths are a trailing indicator. So they're the ones that, you know, got hospitalized because of the holidays are just now being reported. And yeah, there is going to take another month before they die and get all the information and it gets reported. And so it'll be, you know, 4 to 6 weeks before those that went in the hospital this week will actually be recorded as a hospital death. So because there's so many people that are hospitalized now, I think there's 117,000 in the hospital right now, which is also an all-time high, that the deaths will continue to go up. So the deaths in January will be higher than the deaths in December. And those January deaths will replace the December deaths. And then the same thing will happen in February. So the February deaths will replace the January deaths. So each month there'll be, you know, in the top 10, there'll be 10 days or 9 days. You know, they probably won't get ahead of the Galveston, and they won't necessarily all get ahead of the 36 under this month. Next month they probably will. So the ones, so it'll be nine. It'll be Galveston, and then there'll be nine days in January that'll be in the top 10, and then that'll get replaced by 9 days in February in the top 10. And so all of these other events will kind of fade away. I mean, they'll all be displaced by higher numbers due to COVID deaths. And you know, it's kind of striking that there are that many deaths in the United States. The United States has more deaths than any country in the world. They have more cases than any country in the world. And it's not just because the U.S. does a lot of testing. It's the other way around. The U.S. does a lot of testing because they have a lot of cases. And unfortunately, it looks like I mean, it was always kind of unusual. The U.S. is kind of the leader in the world as far as science and innovation and discoveries and even funding. And in spite of kind of being the and preparedness, they were supposed to be the country that was most prepared for a pandemic. So with all of those pluses and the U.S. being about as far away from China as anyone, you know, they basically have two oceans to separate Asia from the U.S. The U.S. is number one. And there was some testimony in Congress today, kind of looking at some of the goings on with the CDC and Health and Human Services. And it paints a very, very unfortunate picture. I mean, a lot of these bits and pieces were known in real time. I mean, it was known that political operatives were overseeing the CDC, and they were holding up productions of reports, and they were demanding modifications to so they wouldn't make the president look bad, and they threatened to basically halt publications on something like the MMWR, which physicians rely upon for guidance on how they handle diseases, including pandemics. And it was clear that the CDC was under siege. They were under siege when Nancy Mattier basically gave her update and said that things are going to change, that the virus is going to come to the U.S., it's going to impact everybody's lives. And then stock market went down, and then that was the last time she gave any report from the CDC. And this task force with Pence in charge was formed, and it just all became very political. But in addition to these political interventions and modeling of the message, it seems that it was much worse than that. That there was a physician, a scientist. Anyway, he said he was a scientist. He's an assistant professor in McMaster University in Canada, where he was listed as part-time. And subsequently, the university has said that, you know, he hasn't really been on their payroll for 3 years. And he's really... yeah, not that closely affiliated with them. And part of the reason they were trying to do some distancing, as he kind of was in charge of HHS. He was the one that was, he was working with Michael Caputo, with, who has no science background. He's a political operative. And he was working for them, and they were kind of controlling what was coming out of the CDC and what the messaging was and what the report said and what they couldn't say and all kinds of censorship. But apparently he was also advocating herd immunity, and this was put forward by Scott Atlas, who basically went on the task force, and he was pushing herd immunity. And then Trump came out and said something, herd, I don't remember what term he used, just some idiotic term that nobody's ever heard of. He called it herd something or other. It wasn't immunity. I don't remember what he said. It made zero sense. I tried to put it out of my mind. It was just, it made it very clear that not only was he advocating a stupid concept that he didn't even know the name of the concept he was advocating for. And although his press secretary denied that that's part of White House policy, the hearings on the Hill today basically revealed emails to show that indeed herd immunity was the U.S. policy. And herd immunity, legitimate scientists are not in favor of that. They know full well that with a virus as lethal as SARS-CoV-2 is, that to let it just roam unchecked would cause massive, literally millions of casualties, fatalities, not infectious. Well, we've already got way past a million infections. We've gotten past 16 million infections. But it would lead to millions of fatalities. Right now, the fatalities are over 300,000. Projections are that it's going to go to 500,000 by the end of February. And if you kind of do the math, there's over 3,500 cases today. And weekdays are higher than weekends, but at 3,500, that's closing in on 20,000 deaths per week. And so you can see how a little over a month, you end up with 100,000, and then you do that for 2 months, and you add 200,000, and then you go from 500,000 today to a half a million in a little over 2 months. And that is actually what the projection is. And this is because of this policy of herd immunity. And Trump actually said a week ago or so, oh, we got herd immunity up to 15%. That's good. That's as good as, that's kind of like a vaccine we've got. And so he's advocating for that. And that's the reason he wants to open everything up. And, well, he wants to do that partly for political and economic reasons. But that is consistent, that essentially the argument is that you're not going to get the virus under control until you get herd immunity. And instead of using a vaccine to get herd immunity, you just want to do it naturally by infecting lower risk people like students and adults without underlying conditions, and thinks that if you get a lot of those people infected, somehow you'll be able to control that so they won't infect their parents or grandparents, which it just doesn't work. That basically they do pass it on to other contacts, and it's asymptomatic. And so if you get a lot of younger people infected, that'll lead to older people. That's exactly what happened. And that is part, if not most, of the reason why the U.S. is number one in deaths, and they're number one in cases, and the virus is under control, out of control, I should say. And as this out of control virus that was talked about a lot, and then when the vaccine came, they kind of focused on the vaccine coming in online with the Pfizer vaccine approval last week and the distribution over the weekend, and then the first mostly healthcare workers getting their first injection. And then they're kind of saying, well, you know, kind of a paradox. You got this vaccine, and this is kind of the beginning of the end, but there's all these cases that are still in the news. And they're going to be in the news because the two events are kind of unrelated. The people that are dying today were infected, like I said, a month ago, a month and a half ago. And people that are infected today and that are going to die in a month or in a month and a half are not going to be protected at all from the vaccine. The only people that are going to be protected from the vaccine are those that are going to get the infection. And then they won't be fully protected for 2 months from now. And the rollout is slower than anticipated. Originally, Pfizer was supposed to come out with 20 million. It sounds like they're coming out with 3 million this week, and they might get up to 6.4 million before the end of the year. So their numbers are far short. And then it's anticipated that Moderna is going to be recommended for approval tomorrow, and probably will be approved on Friday, and they'll be okayed by the CDC over the weekend. And it basically followed the same timeline as Pfizer, except it'll be a week later, and they also have a problem. So they also will end up with about 6 million doses that are released before the end of the year. So that'll about double it, but that would get up to 12 million doses, but that only covers 6 million people because each of them need two injections, and the supply is too unstable to basically inject all 12 million with the anticipation that they'll get the second 12 million injections within the 3 to 4 week time period between the first and second injection. And they can't be positive that's actually going to happen. So they're really only going to use half. They're going to, if they've got 6 million shots, they'll vaccinate 3 million and keep 3 million so they can give them the second shot in case they don't get the supplies. So the bottom line is even for those getting vaccinated, even if they get some immunity from one, it's going to take a few weeks before that happens. And then it's going to take another month before they get full immunity. And not that many are going to get their first shot this year. The most of the ones that get both Moderna and Pfizer will get their first injection in January. And so it's lagging behind, but they're not going to prevent any deaths anytime soon. These people that are getting vaccinated, most of them, probably will not get infected, and therefore they won't have deaths, and they'll start to get a handle on the virus, but they really won't have a good handle on the virus until they get closer to 50 million people that have been immunized, fully immunized. And that's not going to happen until March or April, and then they're not going to be fully immunized until April or May, and so the decline in the deaths are going to be seen in late spring, early summer. And in the meantime, you know, they're setting records, and not only setting records for the numbers that have been that have died, they're setting records for the number that are infected. So today there were, you know, over 200,000 new infections, 233,000. Actually, you could take 7,000 away, so 228,000, 27,000. It might be a little higher because there's still more numbers that might come in from California. But hey, Ben, yeah, it's really 220-something thousand new infections today. And usually the number of infections rises during the week and peaks on Friday. So the numbers by Friday may be closer to 250,000. And those numbers are still not going to be fully reflective of increased infections because of the Thanksgiving holiday. And now Christmas and New Year's are coming up, and that'll lead to more travel and more gatherings and more infections and more positives in January and more hospitalizations in January and February and more deaths in February and March and April. And very few of those are going to be prevented by the vaccine, because those people are going to be traveling in the next couple of weeks, and they're going to be infected. And once they're infected, the vaccine isn't really going to do much. So that's kind of where we are there. And then the other potential problem is the strain that's transmitting in England mostly, but not only in England. And that virus has really got 10 changes in the spike protein because of this new variant that's showing up. Three of the changes are deletions. Two of those deletions are associated with immunological escape. One of the changes is in the receptor binding domain, which in mice anyway increases the virulence of the virus and the ability to attack the lungs in the mice anyway. And there's concern that that receptor binding domain will make the virus more transmissible in humans. And the number of cases are increasing rapidly in the UK. And a lot of this stuff isn't really being conveyed that well in the media. I mean, they talk about this virus that's got a mutation, and it's really got 10 mutations. And after 10 mutations, just in the spike protein, it's got other mutations and other genes, including other deletions, including other terminations. And it's very messy, but it's only messy when you have to write down all the mutations and figure out what they all do. It's not messy from the virus's point of view. That's what the virus does. It evolves. It changes. And because of the potential of evading the immune response, there's concern that by the time the vaccine actually is distributed, that there'll be a new variant that is resistant to the vaccine. And it may not totally knock it, you know, not work, but it may not work as well. And unfortunately, because so many people in the world are affected, and if there's a fair number that actually have immunity, either because they've been infected or because they received the vaccine, then there'll be heavy selection pressure for a virus that can escape from that vaccine. And that selection pressure will lead to dominance of this new version of the virus. I mean, the one that's in England is kind of a dramatically upgraded Italian strain. It's got the same mutation that characterizes the Italian strain and the spike protein, the change of position 614 is D to G. So it's got the D614G mutation, and it's got nine other mutations, including three deletions and including a Russian receptor binding domain change. So we'll keep an eye on the situation in England. It is not good. There's also evidence, it's not evidence, it's isolation of the virus in Denmark as well as in Sydney, Australia. And the Sydney, Australia isolate was from November. So the virus is probably all over the place. It just hasn't been sequenced and reported yet all over the place. And there are more cases in southern England, but it's not limited to southern England. In Wales, it's in Scotland, and those are just the cases that have actually been sequenced and made public. There's probably a lot more. They've actually said that about 10% of the cases get sequenced. So 90% of the cases, there's no sequence data, and England is aware of their problem. They're probably doing more sequencing than most countries. So, it could very well be all over Australia, but they haven't really done enough sequencing, or at least they haven't made enough sequences public to show a lot of examples. But there definitely is a 12-year-old boy in Sydney who has the virus, and he's 12 years old. There's probably a good chance that he's got family members that also have the virus. It just haven't been, it hasn't been isolated and sequenced yet. And, so that's kind of where we are right now. The virus in England be able to somewhat or completely escaped from the new vaccine. The new vaccines are being rolled out slowly. The two lead candidates are Moderna and Pfizer. The U.S. is negotiating to get more shipments of Pfizer. They've already done some negotiating to get more shipments of Moderna, but they have to get in line. A whole lot of other countries have made arrangements with Pfizer, at least. I think some have done Moderna also. And so they've got other obligations in addition to the U.S. The U.S. is getting some of their first shipments. I mean, I had mentioned before, there's five other countries that have already approved the Pfizer vaccine, and several of them have already received the Pfizer vaccine, or at least the U.K. has for sure. I'm not sure these others that have got approval, where they've got their shipments yet, Bahrain, Canada, Saudi Arabia, have all got approval for the Pfizer vaccine in addition to the U.S. So that's where we are right now. The situation is under control. The U.S. policy on herd immunity is a definite driving force. Luckily, that position will end next month, but the damage has certainly been done. The U.S. is in dire straits, even with the vaccine. The death toll will almost certainly go to 500,000 by the end of February. And it's still possible that there'll be more deaths from this virus than there was in the 1918 pandemic, which I think was 644,000 in the U.S. And so on absolute number of deaths, and remember back in 1918, they didn't even have antibiotics, and a lot of these few cases ended up with secondary bacterial infections, and they had bacterial pneumonia, and they ended up dying from the bacterial disease, which wouldn't be as big a problem today because there are antibiotics, but there weren't antibiotics in 1918. They didn't even know what an influenza virus was. They just knew it's a filterable agent that causes this flu-like symptoms, and in case of 1918, a high frequency, 1918 and 1919, high frequency of deaths. So 644,000 that died actually died over two seasons, and there were outbreaks and a minor outbreak in the spring of 1918, then a major outbreak in the fall of 1918, and then another outbreak in the spring of 1919, and then another outbreak in the fall of 1919. So there were like four different waves that gave rise to this 644,000, and the U.S. has a shot at getting the 644,000 this spring, and just over one season. And hopefully the vaccine will start to knock those numbers down, but it may not knock them down a whole lot before there's 644,000 Americans that are dead from this, I don't even know the words to describe it, but for misguided belief that the way to control a virus with this kind of case fatality rate is to just let people get infected and work on herd immunity when in fact there's two vaccines that have 95% efficacy, and the vast majority of the people that get the vaccine don't die. They get their immunity from the vaccine and don't run the risk that either they'll die, or if they're younger, they'll live, but they'll infect their parents or grandparents, and their parents and grandparents will die. So it's just beyond words that this was the official quiet policy, secret. This was the official yet secret policy of the United States, which is denied by the president, press secretary, but certainly alive and well in emails that said, we're going for herd immunity. And the president actually saying a week ago, oh, we're up to 15%. That's really good. And he's always been anti-science, and he's turning the pandemic into a political football was, one major issue that was destined for disaster, and then refusing to wear masks, and then to hold these massive parties and have these super spreader events and do rallies and have more super spreader events, and then decide that 15% herd immunity is good. We got lots of virus, lots of people infected, lots of young people, lots of adults without underlying conditions, and there's hardly any problem that way, ignoring all of the cases that have cardiac problems, even if they have mild disease and don't die. But anyway, that's where we are. The situation in England is probably going to get worse. How much resistance to the vaccine is yet to be determined. And the cases will continue to go up. The 3,500 has already been reached today. It's conceivable it will even get up to 4,000 this week. If it doesn't get up to 4,000 this week, it'll get up to 4,000 this month. And if things keep going the way they are in California, it'll get up to 5,000 next month. So anyway, that's the latest. We'll do an update again tomorrow.
All right. Thanks for the information. This concludes this edition of the Dr. Niagman Show podcast. Have a good evening. Thanks for listening.